Coming up next, the Sony PlayStation 5, a rumored major change from Apple, some good news from Google, and a trip down tech history. Hi, Namaste, what's up, geeks? This is episode 109 of the Tech Podcast that brings you up to speed with the world of tech. I'm your host, Vikram Mohan, and joining me, of course, is Vijay. Hey, Vijay.
Hello.
Vijay, surprising amount of news. I was putting together the show notes and in fact, I had to bump a few news items like Intel announcing its latest line of processors because we just had so many things happening in the past week. Let's not waste any more time. Let's get right down to broken news. And of course, the biggest news, or at least from the viewership levels, was Sony's unveiling of the PlayStation 5, the PS5 console. They've not unveiled the console itself. That is, they didn't give details about it. It was basically about the games that will ship with the PlayStation 5. And as a surprise, they just offered us a look at the design. So, Vijay, what do you make of it? I mean, are you a gamer? Do you have a console?
I wouldn't call myself a gamer as such. It's more like, I do play games once in a while, but not a regular gamer. My elder daughter, she has more interest in gaming. We currently have a Wii U console that is kind of, it's not very entertaining for my elder daughter, and she feels like she needs a change. So I'm really seriously thinking of picking up one of these next gen consoles, either the PS5 or the Xbox Series X. And that's why I actually watched that unveiling with a lot of interest. And they had very little details as far as actual hardware specifications and pricing and all that, but it was more of like non-stop sizzle reels for all the games that are going to come out. And it's not even games that are launching with the console. I think they even showed games that were like 2 years out, releasing even in 2022.
Yeah, basically so, anyone who could give them really good looking cutscenes.
Yeah. Although, majority of the games did not really blow my mind when I the trailers, but I think a couple of them definitely stood out for me. One was Gran Turismo 7. I was amazed at the gameplay visuals. I mean, the sizzle reels are always very well made because they actually just, they are just intros to the game, and they always do a good job of all the computer graphics in that, since you are not really playing anything at that point, just watching the video. But my focus is mainly on the how the visuals look in the actual gameplay, and Gran Turismo 7 looked amazing. The way the it was almost like a photorealistic car racing game. I thought that was really impressive. And the other one was, I think, the Ratchet and Clank.
Yes.
Game. Even that had some really impressive visuals in the gameplay. So these are the two that really stood out. I'm not a big NBA fan, but I think I saw some people raving about the NBA 2021, where they had like really photorealistic players during the gameplay, and you could see the sweat and all that dripping from their body. It looked impressive, but since I'm not a big fan of NBA, I didn't really focus much on that.
Yeah, probably Twitch, Twitch streaming services of these NBA games might probably be as close as many of us will get to a baseball match. So as somebody who's looking out between, it's essentially a toss-up between the PS5 and Xbox Series X. That's quite a mouthful. Let me ask you this. Will the design of the console, the way it looks, have any bearing on your purchase?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the thing is, this, like last, I think couple of generations, the Xbox and the PS5 have mostly been very close in terms of specifications and abilities. So, you know, and more, I mean, leaving out, you know, a handful of those exclusive games, the rest of it is available on both platforms. So there's not really, you know, unless you're a hardcore fan of one of those exclusives, there is nothing really to choose between the two. And so for me, it would boil down to like, you know, the looks of the console as well. I didn't find it bad. I mean, I have seen people panning the look of the PS5, saying that it looks like a Wi-Fi router and all kinds of other stuff. So, but for me, it looked reasonably good. I mean, it has a very funky design, but it's something I think that comes with the whole gaming area. I mean, you've seen gaming laptops that try their best to stand out. So it's like, I think that's exactly how gaming consoles are supposed to be. So I think they have done a decent job. It's not very outlandish, and at the same time, it's not very bland either. And that's probably one small negative point for the Xbox Series X, because it looks kind of bland.
Monolith.
Yeah, it's just, and it's not something that hasn't been done before. So it's not a whole new design. In fact, it strongly reminded me of my old boxy box. Only thing, it's a taller version of it.
That's right. One thing I would have to say, I mean, for me, I think both in terms of design, the Xbox Series X and the PS5 are in opposite ends of the spectrum in what they're trying to do, right? The PS5, like you said, is trying to attract attention to itself, whereas the Xbox is something which wants to kind of merge into the surroundings or prefers to remain invisible.
Yeah. Yeah, they are doing, I mean, Xbox wants to be more of a all-in-one entertainment, home entertainment center. Right. And I think PS5 also can do all that, but it wants to be known or announce itself as a gaming thing first and foremost.
Right. So, and of course, the Xbox kind of looks, because of its very bland design, I guess it looks pretty much the same, whether it, you know, it's standing up or whether it's horizontal. Whereas this, the PS5, I'm not sure how well it would look if it's not standing vertical, and you know, if you
yeah, I mean, it's not really, I think the design was done with the intent of having it standing straight up, and I think it was more of an afterthought to allow it to be horizontal, because it definitely looks much better standing up. But I think, I mean, I don't think it's a big deal unless your home entertainment center is like, there are space issues where you cannot position it standing up. That's the only time you would basically ding that decision. Otherwise, I think,
right,
as long as you have room for it, I think it should be okay to have it standing up.
Right. Of course, we will be talking more about the Xbox and the PS5 as we get to know more. Right now, that's pretty much all we know. The next news, of course, is something we probably, there's not much to talk about. We might want to wait till it's officially released, but Google has just dropped the first public beta of the Android 11. And honestly, the only reason I don't want to talk much about it is because there really isn't much to talk about, is there? For a major release, this is probably the smallest of the major Android releases that I can ever remember.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised that they even were okay to, you know, bump up the release number, give it a major version instead of just doing a .1 or .3 kind of release.
Exactly. I can't think of one major tentpole feature which at least we are aware of. And at this point, I would guess, since it's in beta, we can't expect any big surprises. And any major updates would probably be when they release the Pixel 5, and they usually do a small another release of Android at the time. So maybe that's when we can expect to see something new.
Right. Yeah. I mean, right now, I think the features are, and again, I mean, I think I agree with some of the reviewers that said, like, by now, Android has become a more mature and stable platform. So there's not really much to do wholesale changes. So it's more of just tweaking stuff here and there and see what works for better for users. So I think it's how it's going to be the for, you know, at least for the few more releases until something, you know, groundbreaking happens. So right now, I think these are the best we can expect.
Yeah, but it would be revealing if you know, the same kind of Android 11, let's say, if it was released by Apple, the way they would have touted even those tiny marginal changes. They would have said, this is the greatest version ever, and we've got 450 new features or whatever. But yeah, speaking of Apple, there is expected to be a big news from Apple coming up in WWDC in what, a couple of weeks from now. And news is that the Macs are going to shift from Intel processors to Apple's own A series chipsets.
Yeah, I read about that, and you know, and it has been quoted by multiple sources. So I think, I mean, initially there was just one or two reports, and people were not even sure about the timeline. They said like it could happen anywhere in the next couple of years, but now it looks like it's happening much earlier than people expected. And yeah, I think it's a great move for Apple, and it further, you know, kind of strengthens their vertical integration. This was, I think, the last remaining piece where their PCs were still dependent on, you know, NVIDIA or AMD or Intel, and now they may no longer have to even depend on any of them, and everything is like completely in their control. But I'll be interested to see how much they have performance they can get out of their new, although they have been very impressive. Like, I think even now they're, I think, 2 year old processors are still faster than latest and greatest from Qualcomm or anybody else. So I definitely, they have the ability, but, running desktop applications and, you know, having backward compatibility to some of the Intel based apps, I think it requires a lot of processing power, and I don't know how it's going to work when, based on what we have seen Microsoft struggle with in their ARM version of the Windows.
But Apple, of course, does have a major advantage. One is, they have done this in the past, where when Steve Jobs, if you remember, he announced the switch from a PowerPC, which was what they were on, to Intel. And then
Done the third time. I mean, I think the move to Intel was the third time they did that. First, they did from Motorola to PowerPC.
PowerPC was from Motorola, wasn't it?
No, PowerPC was a joint venture between IBM and Apple.
Okay. And of course, Apple has this other advantage where now if the PCs, I mean, I shouldn't even be, Steve Jobs will roll in his grave if I say the Apple's PCs. If the Macs shift to ARM, or rather to Apple's own process, is that the next version of macOS can probably even run iOS or rather iPad OS apps. So they'll...
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, that is part of their whole grander plan.
Eventually merge both the operating systems.
Yeah. I mean, it's under the, you know, under the hood, it's all the same operating system anyway. It's just a UI layer that's changing between all those three. So now I think it allows them much more flexibility in the way they design their operating system going forward. So
we'll wait and watch on whether Apple announces this in WWDC, though I do hope so. Coming back to Google, we've been swinging between Google and Apple and Google back. So Google Meet apparently is rolling out an AI-based noise cancellation feature in for users. And right now it has some very specific use cases where it filters out dogs barking, kids, and car horns. So they specifically they've called out these and said, you know, right now these are the things which it'll filter out. And the AI will learn more noises. If they're going to do beta testing in India, cooker whistles is going to be number one for sure. But I've not had a chance to test it out. Have you used Google Meet?
I have used it, I think, probably once. But majority of my stuff is either WebEx or Zoom. So very little experience with Google Meet. But I think, yeah, there's a good feature. I think they can, since they have their machine learning abilities, I think they can put that to good use in doing this. I just hope that, you know, it's not, especially the kids' noise thing, I hope, you know, adults whose voice frequency matches closer to kids, they don't get muted because of this.
Right. And in fact, my daughter's school right now, since learning is, the school is online, they are using Google Meet. So if they're going to use this feature as an even there, the kids are going to be muted by default. So I don't know how that will work there. But I'm sure they're taking care of it. But some good news from Google's hardware front, though. We did discuss about this in a couple of episodes back. The feature story was about Google's Pixel problems. But news from there was a report from IDC where I don't know how they get this info, but they said that Google has sold 7.2 million phones, which is probably the highest that they've ever sold. And probably most of them are probably the Pixel 3As, because the Pixel 4s have only sold 2 million. Out of the 7.2 million, only 2 million of them are Pixel 4s. So the rest of them are probably Pixel 3As.
So, I mean, it's not surprising. And I hope that gives some encouragement to, much needed encouragement to Google to stick it out with the A series. Because I think that is where all their success is probably going to come from even in future. So I hope they continue that line.
Now, of course, the way this news was reported on all the blogs was not that they have sold 7.2, which is not an impressive number, because to put that in context, in the same quarter, Samsung has sold 72 million. That is literally 10 times more. 7.2 million is Google and 72 million is Samsung. And Apple sold 36.4 million iPhones. But the way the headlines were all was that Google has sold more phones than OnePlus. Kind of gives you some context too, because a couple of episodes back, we did mention that OnePlus has been more successful. Well, apparently not.
Yeah, I think for Google, it's not a big achievement that they have gone past OnePlus, because OnePlus was almost a very niche player. It's not like they were, they are very wildly successful in the sense that, you know, whatever phones they release have been great successes. So, and everything gets sold out very fast, and within a few months, they come out with the next version, and the previous version is pretty much not available in the market. So they don't really, I don't think their inventory itself is planned for, you know, very high numbers. And I think the fact that they sold, I mean, it's I think for them it should be a matter of pride that they are selling close to what Google is selling in their Pixel line.
I agree with you.
But I think Google has been doing this for 4 years now, and it's I think they need to take a real hard look and think up what their strategy is going to be if they are going to get anywhere close to what Samsung or Apple are doing.
Yes, long wait for that 72 to catch up with Samsung's 72 million. Okay, I think that's pretty much it as far as the news is concerned. We're going to take a quick break, and on the other side is my favorite feature, which is Once Upon a Tech. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Stack. Thanks for sticking around. And like I said, we are going to do my favorite bit, and that's where we take a trip down our tech history. And we've got some interesting things. I mean, whenever I try to put this together, I always like the, you know, I like what I discover. For example, on June 1st, 1999, Napster was released. And for those who don't remember what Napster was, do you want to give a quick overview of what Napster was and how it changed the world?
I mean, Napster, I think, was probably something that kickstarted the whole digital music revolution. You know, at a time when the only options for listening to music were, you know, the old formats like
CDs.
Either FM radio or CDs or record cassette tapes or record players and all that. And then suddenly Napster came in. MP3 format was there, but there was no, it was more of a hobbyist thing where only, you know, nerds like us would take the trouble of actually converting something from a CD to a MP3 and listening to it on your computer. And I think Napster revolutionized that part where, you know, making the largest collection of music available in digital format.
So essentially Napster was what made MP3s a household name, right? Otherwise, like you said, it was something for only for geeks, and Napster made it easy to legally share music.
They started that whole industry of, MP3 players, which suddenly arrived in the market. I mean, those MP3 players didn't really have any content other than, you know, Napster. So it was very clear that, you know, they were made for, sharing or listening to illegal copies of music. But at least since they didn't bundle any services with their devices, they were legally in the clear because they didn't care what you did with the device. And I remember we went through multiple such MP3 players, like those RCA, Lyra, and all that.
Rio, a whole bunch of them. Moving on June 5th, 1977, Apple II was released to the market. And of course, this is one of the landmark in personal computing, wasn't it? The Apple II.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that was the first time that they in unveiled their graphical UI, GUI, and I think even though that was very primitive when you see it now, but I think at that point of time it was revolutionary and kind of started the whole GUI trend.
The Apple II featured a 1 megahertz MOS 6502 processor. It had an integrated keyboard. I mean, that needs to be said because they didn't come with a keyboard. You had an integrated keyboard, a built-in basic programming environment, and expandable memory. 4 kilobytes expandable to 48 kilobytes. Not GBs, not MBs. We're talking about kilobytes here. And it had a monitor capable of color graphics and also a built-in sound card and 8 expansion slots. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I think abilities wise, it was more similar to your Sinclair Spectrum than anything else.
Yes, but with
It was impressive that it came with a complete GUI operating system within that.
It was amazing what they managed to pull off with such tiny little memories, right?
Yeah.
4K, 48K, and all that. And coming fast forwarding a bit more. A year later, on June 8, 1978, Intel introduced the 16-bit 8086 processor, and it came in a clock speed of 10, 8, and 5 megahertz. Not gigahertz, megahertz. So 10, 8, and 5 megahertz. Vijay, you worked on 8086 and 8088 processors, right? These are...
Yeah, I think we both probably have because right. I remember that in our college, the computer lab, majority of the computers were 86. Either 8086 or 88, which is like a more budget version of 86, if you can even imagine that. And I think the handful of high-end, so-called high-end PCs were the 286 processor-based ones, and everybody used to fight over who got the first dibs on those PCs, but the rest of them were all 8086 and 8088 ones. So,
I remember, I think only a couple of those computers also had a floppy drive capable of reading the larger 1.2 megabyte ones. Some of them could only read the 360 KB ones. I remember two PCs could only read 360 kilobyte.
Yeah, the high density drives. So there are only a few with the high density drive. Rest of them were the regular density ones. And I think, it speaks to how late the IT revolution was in India. That, we were, our college days were...
This is 1994,
yeah, 95. Yeah, in the late 90s, and we were still on 80, 88, and 86, whereas it's released in 1978. So we were like easily close to 30 years behind the curve.
Man, yeah. Kind of shameful. Certainly shameful. And I do remember that somewhere in 1995, the college got its first server. It was a 486 with 8 MB of RAM and a 520 MB hard drive. And my first question was, why would anyone need a 520 megabyte hard drive? How on earth would you ever manage to even fill anything close to it?
Yeah. And I remember that server was like a huge one. It was like...
Yes. That server was almost half high. The size of a boy. Anyway, I always love this this feature. Whenever we do Once Upon a Tech. Anyways, we'll do that again sometime soon. And now, of course, is on to my other favorite part of the show, that is Geek versus Geek. I'm very curious about what you brought to this. So tell me about your pick first.
So my pick is the app called Grasshopper. This is again a Google product. I'm not sure if it was something that Google acquired and or it is something that they built from ground up. But this is basically another one of those apps that lets you learn programming. And it is not just for kids, even though the app description might seem like it's made for kids, but it's actually for anyone who wants to casually just pick up some computer programming skills. And, it's more like one of those apps that we have, right? That you use to learn any of the new languages and stuff. So, human languages, it's similar to that in the sense that they give you small exercises that you can do bite-sized pieces whenever you have some free time. And it's all, you can do it on your phone or iPad or anything like that. So you can basically start with very basic problem solving puzzles and then work your way to more complex things. And they cover most of the core programming principles, like arrays and animations. And the thing is, behind the scenes, initially you may not realize it, but behind the scenes, it's all actually running on JavaScript. And once you get through some of the basic exercises, they start exposing you to more of the actual code. Initially, you are doing more of a graphical way of programming, but then you can also see the code that you actually created behind the scenes. And you can choose, as you go higher up in the levels, you actually start getting exposed to more and more programming concepts. And it's a very nice way of learning, building your skills, and you don't have to commit to like a big chunk of your time. You can just maybe even if you spend like 15 minutes a day, you will be able to pick up a lot of stuff over a period of time.
Oh, sounds interesting. I'm sure I'm going to give it a try. So that's Grasshopper. I'm assuming it's, I'm not sure if it is available on iOS too. Let me
It's available on both iOS and Android. And okay. It's also available as a web app if you go to grasshopper.app.
Oh, okay. Yes, I can see Grasshopper on the place, on the, sorry, on the App Store. I'm making Steve Jobs roll around quite a bit on his grave today. Grasshopper, the app, though, it doesn't... Oh, yeah. Now, Grasshopper learned to code by Google LLC. Very nice-looking app. My app is something which I'm very excited about. I mean, I just discovered it maybe earlier this day, this afternoon, where somebody on Twitter made me aware about this. So it's, the app is called Crisp. That's Crisp with a K, K-R-I-S-P. And it's one of those apps which actually got me excited to use, and I'm looking forward to using it even more. Crisp is a app which helps you. We spoke about this earlier. It does noise cancellation for all your calls. And it uses AI for doing it. Now, the app is itself available for iOS. It's available for Chrome and it's available for Windows. So Mac, Windows and iOS, three platforms. And there is a free tier, obviously, I mean, it's going to be a freemium product. But I found the terms quite generous, to be honest. So I have, in fact, I have the app installed on my iPhone as well as before we start recording, I thought, okay, let me also install the Chrome app. I was a bit wary. First, I thought, okay, let me try it out real time for this podcast too. Luckily, there's not too much of background noise right now. There were dogs barking, but I don't hear anything right now. B, I didn't want to take a chance. So right now it's off. So any background noise you hear right now, it's unfiltered, unfortunately. But I did try it out on the iPhone though. And I even simulated a lot of background noise. So I had a white noise generator running. I asked my daughter to make some noise and sing loudly, which she gladly complied with. And while both of them were going on, I spoke into my phone and it records. And you can just turn on, flip a switch and it tells you how, it plays you back the same clip with the noise removed. And trust me, I mean, this is probably one of the best AI-based noise removals I've ever heard. It did a beautiful job. I mean, way above what I expected in actually removing a lot of ancillary noises. There were some noises which even I was not aware of. When I was playing back the recording, I could hear some metal clanging or something like that. And the moment I turned it on, it was gone. So I think we spent a good 15 or 20 minutes, my daughter and I, in trying it out in various environments. And tomorrow, of course, Monday, I'm going to be in office calls all day. So I'm really going to be trying it out. And, I'll give it the cooker whistle test. I'm going to give it, we have a dog at home. So I'm going to see if, it filters out his barking. And I'm going to try it out. So I was telling you that it's a freemium product. So the free tier gives you 120 minutes every week, which I would really say it's quite generous. Because first I thought it was 120 minutes per month and I really wanted to ration it out. Of course, for my office calls, 120 minutes would go off in before lunchtime. But I would say for a free tier, that is quite generous.
So yeah, and it's pretty interesting. I mean, just when Google is trying to incorporate this kind of thing into Google Meet, I think now this makes it available for anybody, regardless of which app, which meeting app they use. And I'm interested to try it out, although I don't have much of a challenge with the noise since my neighborhood tends to be pretty quiet during most of the time. But at the same time, I mean, I'm surprised that they don't have a Android version. I understand the reason probably because the wide variety of devices and,
the usual complaint, yeah.
Yeah, but at least, they can pick the top four or five devices and maybe just say that, it's certified for these and rest of it, try at your own risk or whatever. But I'm surprised they didn't do that for Android.
Probably they might. And I don't know, I have a feeling that maybe a couple of weeks down in WWDC, you might see Apple saying that they're acquiring Crisp. And of course, then first thing they'll remove is the Chrome and Windows versions. And they'll probably bundle it into the technology into FaceTime, for all you know.
Yeah.
Quite possible. So that's Crisp with a K. And Vijay's pick was Grasshopper. We'll be having links to the apps on both the Play Store and on the App Store in your show notes. So do give them a try. Both of them sound very interesting. I know this one is. And even Grasshopper sounds very intriguing. So that's our show for today. And we do have a lot of things coming up. The beta show from Google, that was cancelled. So I don't know. Maybe there might be some big leaks from them, or maybe some unannounced, you know, drops of hardware and software. Apple's WWDC is coming up. So do stay subscribed. And head over to fourspire.net to listen to all the other podcasts we have. That's the number 4, SPIRE.NET. That's pretty much it for this week. And until next time, take care. Bye-bye.